Welcome, sports fans, to another week of the Loveland Magazine Queen City Sports Podcast. I, your host, Chris Ball, I'm happy to be back here with my co-host, Mark Rains, who, along with Jeff Brown, did an excellent job holding it down for a few weeks while I had some stuff to deal with. I appreciate it, Mark. But how was Santa? Hopefully, he was good to you over the break.
Well, Santa was good, and we've got six more nights of Hanukkah to celebrate. So, a lot going on in the Rains household these days.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Hopefully, interspersed with that, we got some good sporting events to watch. Let's start as we normally do with the Bengals last week, taking it to the backup quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson for the Cleveland Browns. Bengals big 24-6 win there. They need to win out, Mark, and they're doing that. They can only play the people that line up against them. And against some backup quarterbacks for the Cowboys, and then for the Titans, and now the Browns. The Bengals have taken care of business, and we can only do what we can do, and we're rolling at the moment.
Well, yeah, and it felt like the Bengals were going to win after the Browns' goal line fumble. And sorry to Jerome Ford, the former Bearcat, who otherwise had a nice day. But then Burrow takes him on a 99-yard touchdown drive, finishes the drive with one of the more absurd TD passes you'll ever see. They were rolling from there. And it wasn't always pretty. They didn't have, they made their share of mistakes over the course of the game, but it never felt like Cleveland had the horses to have any chance to beat them.
Right. And it's kind of a, what you expect from a Browns Bengals game. I mean, it's going to be hard fought no matter who's throwing the football for the Browns. But for Joe Burrow, right, you keep seeing him make these sorts of plays where, the line necessarily wasn't necessarily to blame on that play. But if something breaks down, he's able to just make those moves in the pocket to buy the right amount of time, and he takes hits, absorbs hits. And then he's always looking downfield. I mean, it's very Lamar Jackson-esque, albeit to a different degree. But this is another game where he's just made a great play that I'm not sure very many other quarterbacks in this league could make.
I mean, he's just doing everything at such a high level right now. His pre-snap recognition is excellent and seeing what's there. He's putting passes on the money, but he understands not only the importance of buying time, but how buying time and being able to do those things is what can lead to big plays. It's what can create touchdowns in the empty space where it's hard to have room in the red zone. And so time and time again, he makes these great decisions. There's another play this game where he drew them off sides again. And a few times this year, he's done it and they've blown the play dead. And you can just see how frustrated he is when the refs blow the play dead after he draws someone offside. And this time he didn't. He delivered a strike to chase for a touchdown. He's just his head is perfect. I mean, he's making such great decisions, and he makes a few plays every game where you're just like, this guy's Superman. He keeps buying time and delivering.
And it's again the same numbers that we've come to see from him week in, week out. 23 of 30, 252 yards, and three more touchdowns and no interceptions against a pretty good Browns defense. So we say it week after week, it's like a broken record. There's nothing really else that he and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins can do. Chase with another 100 plus yard. Well, he had 97 receiving yards in this game, I guess. So almost 100 yards. But like you said, that play where they drew him off sides and then threw the touchdown pass, it was another great play by Burrow. So, I mean, the offense is what it is. They're very good. They're going to put up a ton of points, and it's wonderful to see it. The defense, too, I think, backup quarterback, say what you want to say. They've been a turnover machine these past couple weeks, and it continued again where they picked DTR off twice. So I think the defense is trending better, Mark. I mean, despite the opposition that they're playing.
Well, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen last week, but Jeff and I talked about this, and it's just so hard to believe in this defense without seeing it against a good team. They did look competent. They made plays. Again, I Geno Stone was much better today. Hilton looked a lot like his former self today, or I say today, this past week. But it's just hard to think much about this defense when they're not going against an average or above average quarterback. They've just struggled too often when they go against decent to good quarterbacks. And that's just not what we're seeing these last few weeks. We've seen backup quarterbacks, guys that in the right situation can be okay. So I don't know. I have a hard time kind of getting a good feeling. I did like what we saw. I thought from the young defensive lineman, I thought we had some good games. I think Jenkins had a nice day. So there were some things to be encouraged about there. As far as the back end, I just don't know what to think until I see it happen against a good team.
And I think the Bengals defense deserves every ounce of skepticism from the fans that you just expressed. I mean, that's what they deserve. I mean, they haven't proven it otherwise. I think you bring up a very good point that maybe something that's different, right? Because the Browns still have a pretty good line. And you saw, as you said, Chris Jenkins had two sacks on the day. Joseph Osai also had one. Trey Hendrickson also won there as well. If the defensive line can really progress above and beyond what Trey Hendrickson can bring, I think that may be something that's different, something that changes the perspective of the defense and what we're seeing, and maybe helps out that secondary against Denver as they play next week. Again, like you said, I mean, prove it on the field, but the defensive line, apart from Hendrickson, has also seemed to be better against lines in the Cowboys and the Texans or the Titans, excuse me, that have been pretty decent. So I do think that is an area of actual improvement that we're seeing from the defense.
Yeah, if there's one positive takeaway from my perspective, I know the turnovers have been great, but I don't know what to read into that. Are they going to get those same kind of plays against good quarterbacks? I have no idea. But yeah, the defensive line play from particularly the younger defensive linemen that we've needed to see something from, because let's face it, this team's not going to go reinvent their defense in the offseason. Hopefully they'll make a couple smart signings and improve it and along the fringes. But they really need some of these young guys that they've drafted and are trying to develop to take a big step forward, particularly on the defensive line. So I do agree that's been maybe the one encouraging thing that hopefully will translate as we come in these last 2 weeks against two good teams.
Yeah, and we can start there. I mean, talking about Denver and Bo Nix, we obviously have to beat them, and then they have to lose the following week against the Chiefs. The Bengals are not getting any help from the other teams that they need. So just a quick refresher, and I think Mark can probably correct me if I'm getting it wrong, but Bengals obviously have to win out. Broncos have to lose in their final game against the Chiefs, who all intents and purposes look like they'll be resting some of their starters after the win this past Christmas Day. And then the Bengals need one loss each from the Colts and the Dolphins. So, got to take care of business, obviously, against the Broncos. But boy, the Bengals aren't getting any help from the other games they need.
Well, I guess they're not. They got the one piece of help they really needed a couple weeks ago, which was they needed San Diego to beat Denver, so that really Denver only has to lose one other game besides the game against Cincinnati. So that they got that, but yeah, the rest of it they haven't seemed to get the help you'd think you would like to see them get. But there's still chances. Miami and Indy are not good football teams. I know they both play easy schedules down the stretch, but they easily could lose. Miami could easily lose at Cleveland this week. Indianapolis, it's hard to see anybody losing the Giants, but who knows? Maybe they have one last stand, especially with the inconsistency Indy has in the passing game. They're just so bad throwing the football. Like, you feel like anybody could really come up and get them on the right game. And they still have the Jaguars at home, who aren't very good either. But there's always that opportunity. Miami's got the tougher schedule. They're at Cleveland, at the Jets. I do have a question though. Will Kansas City rest their starters? If they do, they're going to sit 24 days between games. Is that,
And
do you really want your team sitting 24 games and you have a chance to eliminate a division rival? I'm not convinced Kansas City is definitively sitting their starters.
that is a good point. I mean, it all kind of factors into how Andy Reid's going to look at that layoff. I mean, they had a much was made about those, three games they played in whatever it was, 10 or 12 days, and how physically demanding that was going to be on, their personnel and on the bodies of the guys. So I think there's an incentive there to rest the players because of that. And it's typically something that Andy Reid's done in the past, from what I've read. But You're right. I mean, are you going to let guys not play a football game for that many days when you can, eliminate, who basically is who do they want in the playoffs, essentially? Do they want to let Denver in or do they want to let Cincinnati in? And I know that's probably a simplified way of looking at it, but you're right. I mean, I don't think it's a given, but at the same time, I think if Patrick Mahomes gets injured in a week, final week game against the Broncos, it doesn't matter. I mean, you're never going to live that down as a coach.
So now I think they might sit Mahomes. So that, I mean that, and that's a big deal. But Andy Reid, the guy knows how to get quarterbacks ready to play. But there is just something for me. It's this is not a normal season. They played Wednesday, and then you're going to go 10 days between games between that and your next game. Which, okay, whatever. But then there's another week before the first round that you're not playing, and another week. I mean, 24 days is a long time to not play football and then to revamp again. Like I could see him playing their starter some and then sitting him in the second half, or there's a lot of ways I could see them doing this, but I'm not convinced they're gonna sit their starters against Denver. I'm just not.
I think that's a reasonable position to take. I think they're going to probably play pretty close to the chest, mostly to probably get back at the Bengals, and make our lives, our rooting lives miserable. But I
They can
agree with
still
you.
let Miami and Indy in the playoff. Like those teams have a chance, right?
Exactly. So I guess it comes down to, what do we do this Saturday against the Broncos? And we have to win that one first and foremost. And the rest of it's kind of, speculation and questions. But I don't know. I haven't watched a lot of Broncos football, but I've seen the stats and I've read the articles. And I mean, Bo Nix is for real. And when you have a coach like Sean Payton, who has a track record of, having great quarterbacks, it's like you said earlier, this Broncos team is going to test this defense and we're going to know for real, pretty quickly on Saturday, if they've actually learned something and adjusted, or if they're just, basically riding the coattails of playing bad teams. We're going to know that pretty soon, I think.
Well, in Denver, I mean, they are ninth in DVOA, so some of the numbers say they're pretty good, and their defense has been excellent for most of the year. The offense, it's been kind of mid, though. You have to the progress that Nix has made has been great, but it's been kind of a mid offense, and they're a lot like the Bengals in one sense. They're 1-6 against teams that are 500 or better. They're 8-0 against teams under 500, so. They've gotten fat against the bad teams on their schedule, much like the Bengals have gotten fat against the bad teams on the schedule. They've happened to play a few more teams under 500, and they didn't have that slip up against New England that really is costing the Bengals right now. They'd control their own destiny if they came out to the season ready to play, for the first time in the Zach Taylor era. So that's the difference between those two teams is they didn't slip up once against the under 500 teams, but they've both made their season beating the bad teams.
Right. And I think while Nix is one of the better stories, I think, especially one of the best stories for rookies in the NFL, he's had some very, very bad games. I mean, he threw for 130 yards against the Colts and three interceptions, right? I mean, they still won that game. And then going back through for 164 yards, no touchdowns against the Saints, just 60 yards, against the Jets. So, I mean, he's had great games, and I think he's very poised for a rookie, more so than probably any of the other ones. But I do think that there's a chance that he can get rattled, and we can get to him, and maybe he doesn't put the pressure on the defense that other quarterbacks have, because he's going throw for throw with Joe Burrow, and the Bengals offense is going to put up points. I would hope they would. And that puts a lot of pressure on a rookie quarterback to keep up, especially if they get down by a couple scores.
Yeah, Denver's pass rush worries me because they have had the best pass rush in the NFL this year. And as good as Burrow is buying time, he's also the one area he's made mistakes is when he's tried sometimes too hard to buy times and he's fumbled the ball. It's happened a few times in the last few weeks. So their pass rush does worry me. But yeah, the Bengals are going to get theirs at some point. They've done it against all the good defenses they've played, whether it's the Chargers, the Steelers, the Chiefs, even against Philly, they really got theirs early and then they had some bad mistakes in the second half that stopped them. They really didn't, they wouldn't have been stopped otherwise. So The offense is going to be fine generally. It might be harder this game, and there may be a couple mistakes. But the big thing is, yeah, how do we do against the rookie quarterback? Because the Bengals defense has struggled against good quarterbacks. I don't think Nix is a good quarterback yet. I think he has his moments of a good quarterback, and I think he might be a good quarterback next year, but he's not there yet. And so, can this defense that has looked really good against backups the last few weeks, can this defense look good against a solid but not great starter at this point in the season? If they can, the Bengals should be able to get out home with a win.
Yeah, it does help that it's at home. And I think you mentioned again a good point about the Broncos pass rush. 51 sacks this year. That's tops in the league in a per game basis. And just today we're hearing that Orlando Brown Jr. is going to be good to go at left tackle. Amarius Mims, I think, is playing with a broken hand. So, I mean, we got two tackles that are coming off some pretty significant injuries. And you never like to see that against such a pass rush. But they're going to play, they're going to gut it out, and it's good to have your guys completely there for the offensive line. It's just, again, the guards, how are they going to play? How are they going to fare? So it's a big question mark, and I hope that they're ready because we're going to need to put up some points.
Well, it sounds like they're going to move Ford inside, which is a breath of fresh air because the guards have been terrible. You need to shake something up in there. So it does sound like they're going to move Ford inside for the game.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how they shuffle that through and hold on to the line. So it's going to be a great game. We have to win. Obviously, our season's on the line, and if there's no one that I trust more in that situation than Joe Burrow. So big game on Saturday. Nice, good day to watch football along with the other kind of college football playoff games we have coming. But I want to talk a little bit, if you're ready, Mark, about the some more Bearcats basketball and see if you've got any insights for us or thoughts about how their season's going as they kind of take the longer holiday break before they get back in action.
I have one. I do have plenty of thoughts, but can we talk one more thing that I wanted to bring up? Chase Brown as a true number one running back. It's something that we were both excited about preseason. I think it's one of the few things we got right about this Bengals team, where we're a little too optimistic that the defense could be middle to bad instead of horrifyingly bad. But he's been a true number one back. He's been better to me, better than Mixon in every way in this offense. A guy who can make explosive plays, a guy who's good in pass protection. Honestly, as far as off moves the Bengals have made, letting Mixon go and letting this guy kind of take over has been really good for the offense.
And I think it's been in every aspect of the game to a certain extent, right? Catching the ball out of the backfield, running the ball, like seeing the vision he has and the patience as well, but also pass blocking. I haven't really noticed a big drop off of, the pass blocking, which is really important for running backs. And it's basically been him. I mean, they had Moss get hurt, and you thought that maybe when they signed that Bears running back, he was going to play some sort of a role, but it's really been just Chase Brown back there. And I think we were right to be so high on him. And again, that's a component of the offense that we're going to have for several years coming, which is
He
I've
fits
given the
so well.
Bengals, yeah, I've given the Bengals a lot of flack for, bad middle round, draft picks, but he is definitely an exception and they deserve a lot of credit for drafting him.
Yeah, very talented runner, but really good in pass protection. Good receiver in the passing game. I mean, he's really exactly what you need for a Joe Burrow offense. So, I was excited to have a guy who could make some plays in the backfield, but he does so much more than that. He's proven to be the every down back we need, and that's great.
Right. And he's going to have another a big test this week. And if he can help out Joe Burrow, because I do think with the Patrick Surtain kind of being on Ja'Marr Chase for a lot of it, he's an excellent cover corner. And so Chase Brown and then T. Higgins are going to be kind of two of the X factors if Chase gets bracketed. So I'm interested to see how those matchups play out.
I agree with you. So, on to the Bearcats. We've just completed their successful non-conference schedule. I thought it was successful in that they went 3-1 against the best teams on the schedule. They beat Xavier. They beat a really good Dayton team on a neutral court. They survived two injuries to two of their top six rotation players, and I think that's been kind of underlooked at is Dan Skillings and Day Day both missed significant time. Skillings more than Day Day. and they had to be integrated back into a roster that was kind of in flux, and guys were playing a little different roles than they expected to play. So I have a hard time looking at the non-conference as anything but a success. They're 21 KenPom, they're fifth in adjusted defense, 52nd in adjusted offense. And I think they're actually a top 15 type team. You know, the gap between 25 and 12 in KenPom is tiny. It's basically if you play one great game, you're going to make a big jump because they're very small gaps between these teams when you look at efficiency margins. And so while UC's been doing this while battling injuries and working guys back in the lineup, I think it speaks volumes to the roster they've built, and they have a high ceiling going forward.
And we talked about this a little earlier in the year. We were kind of looking at a preview, and I don't want to rush you too far ahead. But so they have Kansas State on Monday. Then you get into just a kind of a meat of the schedule for the conference. Arizona comes to town January 4th. They go to Baylor and then host Kansas on January 11th. How do you think this team is positioned at this point to make a run through that schedule? What are you looking for in that murderer's row of a schedule as we get into the new year?
Well, I'm looking for 2-2 or 3-1. 4-0 would be awesome, but that's a very tall order. But Kansas State's not been as good as everyone kind of thought they might be. They brought in a lot of high profile transfers, but they have not meshed very well. Right now, they're either the lowest or second lowest ranked team in the Big 12 by KenPom. But it's on a road game. It's a top 100 team, so it's tough to win those kind of games. So it'll be a test. But it's one that you would hope they can win. Home against Arizona. Arizona's played a loaded schedule. They lost all of their big road, they're all their big games really, but they're still a top 25 KenPom team. But again, it's at home against an Arizona team that hasn't been able to pull it out. You would hope that they're going to have a good chance to win that game. They go road against Baylor. Baylor's a really good team. They'll be underdogs. I think KenPom has them at 36% chance to win that game. So very, it's winnable, right? I think we match up pretty well with them. I think teams are really going to struggle with Cincinnati's length. They throw so much athleticism, skill at teams defensively. And then they have Kansas at home, and Cincinnati I think will be favored in that game unless things go really poorly the next, three. And despite Kansas's lofty record, Kansas is very good, but it's a home game. I think UC will be a slight favorite in that game. You're going to be, when they're a favorite, they're not going to be that high to win any of these games, right? Other than maybe Kansas State. And even then, it's probably going to be like 70% to win it. So you'd expect to take a couple losses. If they can go 3-1, that is great. If they can go 2-2, they'll be well positioned for a nice run in the Big 12. Anything worse, I think it's cause for a little bit of concern. It's not panic time, but I think it's cause for a little bit of concern.
You talked about some of the injuries that the Bearcats were facing. How are those guys going to be back for that stretch run, or what's the latest you're hearing on that front?
Well, everyone's back. They had another injury recently. He may not Hick Connor Hickman, but I think he'll be back too. I think he sat because they were playing a bye game and then they had a lot of time off. So I think they just wanted to give him the extra time. I think he'll be fine and healthy. But yeah, Dan's back, Day-Day's back, and they've been integrating them into the lineups. They both were there for the Xavier game. They both were there for the Dayton game. Dan missed the Villanova game, which is the one loss on the season. So yeah, they're back. They're all playing at a high. I think everyone's playing at a high level. Dan's kind of figuring things out. He's just got such an odd game that people really struggle with. But Dan, Jizzle, Day-Day, they're making everything incredibly difficult for opposing guards to do anything. Aziz and Dylan Mitchell are both playing at absurdly high levels. I don't see any reason any of those guys should drop off in how they're playing, especially defensively. This is going to be an elite defense, probably a top five type defense in the country. Right now, they're a top five. I think they might be better than that when it's all said and done because they are kind of just now getting everybody into the fold and into the roles that we expected them to be in. But the big thing is, can they make a jump to a Final Four contender? And to do that, they've got to get a little better on offense. They do two things really well on offense right now. They offensive rebound and they protect the ball. They don't turn it over. But they've shot it poorly late, and then throughout the course of the season, they haven't gotten to the foul line. They actually have done pretty well against good teams recently, against Xavier, against Dayton, getting to the foul line. I think it's been a huge part of why they won those games. I'd like to see that continue. They've slumped shooting the ball, particularly Tsimas, who was scorching hot early in the year. He's really struggled, but Dan hasn't been as reliable as you hope he's going to be. I don't think he's a 20% 3-point shooter, like he is right now. Probably a low 30s, which is fine for what he's asked to do. Connor Hickman's another guy who hasn't shot it as well as you expected him to. So if the shooting can come around from the outside, they've got inside guys that can finish. They're going to offensive rebound really well. They're not gonna waste possessions by turning it over. So those are the things they need to do to become a top 25 offense. And if they become a top 25 offense with this defense, they'll be a Final Four contender.
We talked about kind of Tsimas and how he was playing so well earlier this year, and I asked you that question as to whether he could, to what extent he could keep shooting at that high level, and it was so far in the stratosphere that it's understandable he's come back to earth a little bit, I guess. But looking at this Bearcat team, I mean, are you gonna know, I feel like, a lot about whether they can be that Final Four team, or at least have a better idea of it after they get through this tough part of the schedule? But are you looking for Dan Skillings to be a big part of that, to get better through that schedule? Or is, because he's still working back from that injury, getting integrated, as you said, he's going to have to get better pretty quick, it looks like.
First, Dan's been really good. He's not made shots, outside shots, but he has been really good since coming back. He's got, I think, the highest assist rate of his career, which means he's creating for others, which is something he really never did before. It's up around 20%. He's only turning the ball over about up at a 12% rate, which is pretty low, really low, incredibly low for Dan. He's got a high block percentage. He's got a high steal percentage. He is getting to the foul line and he's making his foul shots. He's not finished around the rim as well as you'd like him to, but I think that'll come. But he's rebounding at his normal absurd rates for a guard. He is such a difference maker rebounding the basketball. I saw some great stats last year, and I wish I could have them off the top of my head, but basically nobody in the country affected team rebounding like Dan Skillings does. And it's because he's a shooting guard, right? They have him playing the two. And he's coming in and rebounding like a power forward. And so and it's just something teams don't have. He'll put up a 3-point, he'll tell it's going to be short, he'll go get it. If you watch the Xavier game, he missed a free throw late and he knew he was going to miss it and he got in there and got his own rebound on the free throw and laid it in. And that's the only free throw he's missed this year. But he just does so many little things like that that you just don't see. He affects the game in so many ways. He's been great already since coming back. And yeah, I think the ceiling's even higher because I do think he's going to start making some jump shots. He's not a great shooter, but he's not as bad as he's been shooting it so far.
All right. Well, is there any last words you want to give on the Bearcats before we move on to the next topic, or are we good to head over?
Well, we got, so, I mean, it's a. Big things coming forward with the start of the Big 12 play. I want to, like, last year was absurdly fun, and that was despite UC finding a way to lose so many close games. And that's because the conference is competitive top to bottom. Every night is a big game. I ex fully expect this year UC will be better. I can't wait to see how everything unfolds over the next 3 months. I love the top of this lineup. I just love the top of this line. I think they're the top six guys in this on this team are all excellent college basketball players. And I think that's going to pay off. And if they can get Hickman and Betsy to make a few more shots and Paige to give them good minutes off the bench, this team has a ceiling as high as any Bearcat team since Huggins was here.
Well, that's definitely positive things to say. We're looking forward to more Bearcat basketball in the future. I would like to talk, maybe, if you're okay with it, about some college football playoff games. I'm sure you got your
Absolutely.
eyes on those. Is there one matchup of the college football playoff that's left that particularly strikes your fancy as a more interesting game to watch?
Well, I mean, we loved Oregon, Ohio State early this season. That was a great game. But I have my eye on Notre Dame, Georgia, because I think Notre Dame's really good. I think Georgia has maybe the second most talent behind Ohio State, but I don't. Without their quarterback, I don't know how elite they are. I think they can be got. I love this Notre Dame team. I love the way they run the football. And it's going to be a big question. Can they run the football against Georgia and the way Georgia plays defense? Because I don't think their passing game is quite good enough to carry them if they can't run it. but they've been able to run on everybody. So I'm intrigued by how that Notre Dame rushing game will go against Georgia.
Yeah, we're so used to Georgia having all those studs on defense, and they still have a very good defense this year. But boy, is there more of a 360 from a quarterback than Riley Leonard, pre and post Northern Illinois. I remember watching that game and watching them lose and listening to some of the Notre Dame podcasts after that. And boy, they were down in the dumps. And to watch Riley Leonard play last week and how well they played, it's like night and day difference, because he can run the football, he's got a good arm, he's making better decisions. So without Carson Beck, for Georgia, it's going to be an interesting game. I think it's more interesting now, with him out, than it would ever would have been otherwise, because who's going to step up for Georgia and go against that tough Notre Dame defense? I'm not sure I have an answer for that one.
Well, yeah, and I got to be honest with you. I grew up not liking Notre Dame at all, but I've got a soft spot for Notre Dame right now. Marcus Freeman's their coach. I loved him at UC and the things he did for that defense. But they got Mike Denbrock, who was UC's offensive coordinator, who during some of their best years. Mike Brown was a coach at UC. Gino Gaudioli, one of the all-time great quarterbacks at UC, was also a coach during that run. Mike Mickens, who's one of their all-time cornerbacks at UC, who was there when UC first made the Orange Bowl, is their defensive game backs coach and defensive pass game coordinator. I think he's a future defensive coordinator, maybe in a future head coach. So it's pretty cool watching this Notre Dame team with so many ties to the University of Cincinnati, and the staffs and the players that have come through here. So I kind of have a soft spot for this Notre Dame team. I'd like to see them do well.
I wouldn't mind it, considering my wife's aunt is probably the biggest Notre Dame fan that I know. So, and my uncle, or her uncle, actually played there. So we have a lot of ties there as well. So I'd like to see them do well also. I do want to talk about Ohio State for a second. Obviously, being a Michigan fan, I have a lot of thoughts about that game. And boy, Michigan fans were kind of a buzz after Ohio State's game against Tennessee, because that was the Ohio State offense we were all worried we might see against Michigan. And they just totally flipped the perception mark. It's like, you go from, everyone wants Ryan Day fired to, okay, well, this team is probably on the odds on favorite to win the whole thing now. And it's amazing how that changes in just the span of a few weeks after just one game, basically.
I'll be honest, my opinion of Ohio State hasn't changed at all. I think they're the most talented team in the country. And I think Ryan Day's not going to be able to win four games to win the title. He got one. I don't think he's going to be able to get four. So it'll be interesting because this is a big one. They played a great game against Oregon early in the season, and it was at Altman. And so, Ohio State wasn't able to pull it off, but they were right there. They were driving at the end of the game. We had some good gamesmanship by Lanning at the end of that game. So, both these teams, they seem pretty even when we first saw them. This one will be on a neutral field. I think Ohio State's more talented. But it'll be very but Oregon's had a great season, and when it gets tough, when there's game deciding plays on the line, I still don't have a lot of confidence in Ryan Day to get it done over the course of the next three games.
Yeah, and I guess your question is, if he doesn't make that run, I mean, if he doesn't win out and win a national championship, is his future in jeopardy? Do you really think that?
I don't. No, I don't think they're going to fire a guy who has the most talented team in the country, who wins almost every game against lesser competition, who's beaten some really good teams over the course of his time there. But I do think it's right to have some concerns about them just because of how high their talent level has been. I mean, I just think their talent level's been absurd the last half decade, and you would think they'd have a title to show for it in that time, and they don't.
Right. And some of the other games, I guess we can talk about real quick. We got about 5 minutes left. Texas, Arizona State. So a team we're very familiar with from both ends, Michigan playing Texas this year, and also the Bearcats playing Arizona State. And I think it's an interesting matchup, only because I want to see how Cam Scatabu does against that Texas defense, and if he can have a level of success against one of the best defenses he's probably going to face or has faced all year. We talked a lot about that Arizona State game before we played them, and he's been electric all year, and I love to watch him personally.
Yeah, he's great. They're a great story. They've really turned into a good football team. I don't know. There's not a lot of bad to say about what they're doing. I don't know that they're going to be able to hang with Texas. But I also don't have a ton of confidence in Texas either. So it is interesting if they can make a few plays in that game, if their freshman quarterback can get comfortable, and you can make Texas feel the pressure. Can that affect the game? Because I think Texas is a lot more talented than they are. But Scatabu's great, and he has made great plays all year. UC actually did a relatively good job keeping him in check. UC is 1-0 against the college football playoff field. But he's tough, man. And you think you have him down, you think you have him bottled up, and he gets out and makes plays. So it's going to be interesting. I love how Arizona State's playing. I don't think they're nearly as talented as Texas.
Right. And you talked about Arizona State's freshman quarterback versus, arguably one of the most experienced and veteran quarterbacks in the country, Quinn Ewers. He's very efficient when he needs to be. He's a great quarterback. And I think Arizona State's defense is going to have a tough time, I think, dealing with him and what he brings to the table. So interesting to see it there. I think the last game we have to talk about is the one that's on Tuesday, I believe, which is Penn State and Boise State. And I feel like it's kind of a wild card for me. I don't know. I think Boise State's like an 11-point underdog, which with but Ash and Janti with them in the backfield, it's usually kind of the Penn State running backs that are so the more dominant ones in the country. But to see what he can do maybe and try to get an upset against Penn State, what do you think the odds of that are?
Not good. That's another game I don't feel very good, very strongly that is going to be competitive. I think there's going to be two games that should be pretty competitive, Georgia, Notre Dame, as well as Ohio State, Oregon. And I think there are two games that probably won't be competitive. And that's Arizona State, Texas, obviously, and Boise State. I don't know why. I don't know why it slipped my mind. We're just talking about it.
Penn State.
Boise State, Penn State. Franklin's another guy I don't have a lot of confidence, but I think he's gotten a really nice draw getting SMU. And I thought SMU would be a little more competitive with Penn State. And I think those pick sixes kind of changed the game. I thought that would have been a little better game and maybe you could get the pressure on them. I think SMU is pretty good. I don't think Boise is nearly as good. I think they've had a good year. I think Genty is awesome. And maybe he breaks, if he can break a couple runs and then they can run a lot of clock and keep that clock moving and put the pressure on Penn State, maybe there's a chance. But I just don't think they're good enough.
And I don't know a lot about Boise State's quarterback, but I mean, if Penn State's defense is pretty good, and if they put all the pressure on, again, Boise State's quarterback to beat them, I'm not sure if he can accomplish that. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I don't think it'll be close. I'm with you on that one. I think we'll have a whole another episode maybe about the college football playoffs decision to how they seed these teams and whether or not they've done a good job, because again, Penn State, talking about that draw that you just said with SMU and now Boise State, I'm not sure if that's the way maybe it should work out in the end, but I could be wrong there.
I don't know. I think it's just a fluke of Clemson winning the ACC title and not being very good this year. If SMU won it, I think they would have been in there and Arizona State would be out. I like it. I like the value of the conference championship and it might make some interesting matchups, but it doesn't bother me. It values the conference titles. I think that's cool.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have. I want to thank you, Mark, for being with us and happy to be back, and I wish everyone a happy holiday and a safe new year.
All right, go Bearcats.